football on off the ball?
I think there is one pretty obvious candidate staring them in the face domestically, and that is Jens Bertel Askew, the Motherwell manager, who has performed wonders with this Motherwell team.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Rugby Daily.
With Bank of Ireland, a proud sponsor of Connacht, Leinster, Munster and Ulster Rugby. Never stop competing.
Welcome along to Monday's Rugby Daily. I'm David Wilson. Coming up today, there's a squad update from the Irish camp after Saturday's historic win over England. France keep their Grand Slam hopes on track with a thumping win over Italy. And the Italians look set to be one of their star players for the rest of the championship. But first, the Ireland squad will gather for a two-day camp in Dublin on Wednesday as preparations continue ahead of the Round 4 Six Nations clash against Wales at the Aviva Stadium on Friday week. James Lowe will continue to be monitored by the medical team over a groin injury, while Jack Conan will return to training this week after missing the victory over England with illness. Meanwhile, Harry Byrne, Nathan Doak, Edwin Adogbo, Tom Farrell, Cormac Isichukwu, Michael Milne, Darren Murray, Jude Postlewaite, Cian Prendergast, Tom Stewart and Bryn Ward have all returned to their provinces ahead of the URC action this weekend. The Ireland men's senior and under 20 squads will train at the annual open training session on Thursday morning at the Aviva Stadium. Two events at Twickenham on Saturday, and after Ireland's record win over England in the Six Nations, Alan Quinlan and Matt Williams joined Ger Gilroy and Paddy Andrews on Monday morning's Off the Ball breakfast, and Williams questioned the decision to start Henry Pollock and the English demeanour around the game.
The biggest influence a coach can have on a game is the people he selects. And in rugby, we've got a significant bench that you can change. But I thought Borthwick's decisions sent the message to his team that they're panicking. So he hooks his line out thrower off.
He's
fullback after 25.
Scrum half.
He sends a message, we're panicking, especially that hooker one. Because they had, I can't see the logic of what they were trying to do in the line out. It was just a madness to me. But then to send that message as well, I think added to the panic within the side. I also think that the English demeanour with Pollock and Curry giving lip to everyone came back and bit them on the bum. And I'm going to say something. I was very happy to see Pollock put in his ass a number of times. He absolutely annoys me. Back in the old days, he'd have a nose going in five different directions. The old blokes would have sorted him out. But if you go out and talk like that and you show disrespect, which he's done for a long time, eventually that disrespect comes back to get you. That's the karma of our game. And I felt both their flankers were lipping it up. You see them talking to the officials at scrum time. They're dipping their shoulders. Someone needs to grab those two boys because they're both fine footballers and say, listen, pull your head in, shut up and play rugby because you're good at it. Let the actions do your talking, not your talking do the actions, because that's what Ireland did. And Quinny, to your point post-game, they didn't brag. They didn't carry on. They went out, they let their actions do the talking. Look at the scoreboard. We've done our stuff. We'll be humble. And that's their experience. If we take that over to Andy Farrell, what did he do? He put Tyburn back to six, which I've been calling for a while because I thought he was magnificent with the Lions. And he put his biggest, toughest, hardest old heads out there from 1 to 8 for the first 25, 30 minutes and said, let's get on top of this English pack. If you're going to beat England, and it's like Paddy said, you're playing England, that's the only motivation you need. Get on top of that pack and we're right in this. Because the Scots showed the week before, if we get on top of them, they'll crack.
And despite the positive weekend for Irish rugby, Williams says there are still some questions over the age profile of the Irish squad and player pathways.
To Quinny's point there, it hasn't fixed everything, right? But has it paused some of the conversations we were having about age profile, X factor, misalignment between Leinster and Ireland? None of that seemed to matter at the weekend. Are they still issues? Are they just less issues than we thought they were? What's going on?
Oh, they're all absolutely real issues. Yeah. I've said on the show, it was the week after Al and I were on after Munster beat Leinster last October at the Aviva. And I was trying to say to everyone, look, we're really not going to know about this side until after the Six Nations because of the Lions. And people get sick of talking about it, but it's real. And all the Lions, every Lion I've spoken to a man has said, look, it takes 6 months. And so I just, and there's this, the other issue you're seeing in this Six Nations is the mental sharpness of the first 20 minutes. Teams that are mentally sharp in the first 20 are dominating, with the exception of Wales. They're blowing that game in an incredible manner the other day with that restart they didn't take. But if you think France blew Ireland away in the first 20 minutes, Scotland blew England away in the first 20, Italy, you know, even though it wasn't a giant score, blew the Scots away the first 20, and the first 20 minutes of Ireland defensively was absolutely supreme. And that was the big difference. It doesn't make the players any younger. Tyke Byrne was magnificent at six. He's still 34. Jamison Gibson-Park was fantastic. One of his best games in a green jersey. He's still 35. Tyke Furlong came back. Wow, what a performance from a tight end prop. His work on the breakdown, his defence, and obviously his, what he does as a prop, as scrummaging-wise, was absolutely world-class. He's still in his mid-30s. That's not going away. But what it's proved is all the talk that they're finished now, it's all over, throw these guys out, let's bring in young guys, that's not right. They were certainly up for it. What we've got to temper this with, I'm sure, I haven't heard all Alan's conversation, I'm sure he said it. Look, in defence, England were just absolutely diabolical. If you look through at those line breaks when Caelan Doris goes through, like, what is Genge doing? Like, what is he doing? Josh Vanderflair, what are they doing? It wasn't like there was no one there. There's an English defensive line. There's an English defender there to tackle all of those. Tommy O'Brien's break. There's someone there to tackle them, and they simply don't make the tackles. So England were part of, massively part of their own demise. But it was a great Irish performance, but many of the problems that we said still exist, yes.
And if you want to hear that back in full, you can do so now in your OTB Rugby podcast feed. And remember, you can listen to Off the Ball Breakfast each and every weekday morning from 7:30 on the Go Loud app and on YouTube. And if you haven't already, don't miss a minute of rugby this month with an Off the Ball subscription. For a limited time, you can get your first month for just €1. That's all your Six Nations coverage, expert analysis, specialist podcasts and more. Try OTB for a month for just €1 and see why Ireland's rugby fans never switch off. Download the Go Loud app and join in the obsession today. And tonight on Monday Night Rugby, Owen Shane will be joined by Andy Dunn and Gerry Thornley. That'll be available on your radios from 8 o'clock tonight on Off the Ball on News Talk and the Go Loud app. And if you want to listen at your own leisure, you'll be able to do so in the OTB Rugby podcast feed. And on this week's Sunday pay-per-view, Adrian Barry was joined by Orla McElroy, sports editor with the Irish Daily Mail, and Brendan Hackett, sports psychologist and head of coach and player development with the GAA. And the trio praised the impact of Ulster's Stuart McCluskey on this Irish team.
It always felt to me when Ireland were at their best in that 22-23 time that they just did what they did really, really well. And what they did was fight for each other and work damn hard. And to me, the thing that typified that yesterday was Stuart McCluskey. In the 74th minute, to race the way he did, and I didn't think he had that speed, but he absolutely galloped after Marcus Smith, who could clearly hear him coming because he absolutely bottled it and, you know, took the step back, and McCluskey was able to bundle him into touch. That's the one they will be hauling out when they meet again to say, this is what we expect and this is what we need and this is what an Irish rugby player has to produce. Mm-hmm. Because that is what I felt was missing. And there was right throughout the team, you could pick out people who led by what they were doing. This team doesn't have the Paul O'Connell type figure. You can't imagine them in the dressing room given the fear of God speech. But they have players who all across the pitch led by what they were doing, and they showed with their deeds the way to play. And I'm sure Andy Farrell would be thrilled with all of that he saw.
Yeah, the McCluskey thing was off the chart. There wasn't one person, including afterwards, listening to McCluskey himself in the interview, who thought he was going to catch Smith.
It was insane.
He said, oh, I'm not going to get him. And then after a while, I thought, oof.
There's a famous saying, wing mirrors. When you can hear somebody coming, yeah. It was like Marcus just looked in the wing mirrors or heard McCluskey coming, because you thought he had the speed to get across the line. I it's a real Paul O'Connell saying no talent moments.
No, yeah.
You know, there's no talent required for that. That's just sheer hard work, guts, intent.
And that is available to listen back to now in its entirety in the both the Rugby and Sunday Paper Review podcast feeds. France recorded a bonus point win against a spirited Italy in Lille to maintain their bid for a Six Nations Grand Slam and back-to-back titles. Les Bleus raced into a 19-0 lead through tries from Louis Bielbire, Emmanuel Meafou and Thomas Ramos, who was a late switch at fly half after Mathieu Jalibert was ruled out of the game. Despite the early dominance on the scoreboard, Italy remains competitive and responded through an Ange Capozzo try and a Paolo Garbisi penalty. With Louis Laine in the sin bin, debutant Gaël Drian grabbed the vital bonus point try and Emilien Gaëtan crossed in a less eventful second half. The visitors have only beaten France twice in Six Nations history, with the 2024 game ending in a thrilling draw in Lille. France next travel to Edinburgh to take on Scotland on Saturday week, March the 7th, while Italy hosts England on the same day. A bonus point victory at Murrayfield will not only clinch the title for Fabien Galthié's side, but also set up the chance of winning a first Grand Slam in the Championship's final match against England. Gonzalo Quesada's Italy defeated Scotland in the opening round, but ran out of steam in the closing stages of the second half against Ireland and Les Bleus. Italy will now target a first win over England, who have suffered back-to-back heavy defeats. Ange Capozzo's Six Nations campaign could be over before it has begun after the Etsyuri fullback picked up a shoulder injury in Sunday's defeat to France in Lille. In what was his first appearance of the year following the finger injury, Capozzo fielded a succession of high balls from the off and was on the receiving end of some crunching tackles, but still managed to cross for Italy's only try and was his side's top ball carrier. However, following the defeat, Italy head coach Gonzalo Quesada admitted that the Toulouse player could be out for a period of time. Italy completed the last 8 minutes of the France game with an all-change back three, with Monte Ioane replaced by Paolo Adogwu and Louis Laine in the sin bin for the second time in the championship for a deliberate knock-on. That is about all we have time for on today's Rugby Daily. I'm David Wilson. Be back with more tomorrow.
To listen to all of our rugby coverage, become a member by signing up at offtheball.com/join now.
So a chance now with less than 2 minutes to go. Kempers versus Shelton. No chance, 2-2. Kempers' second goal. Shelton was left without a hope.
Mario Kempes, the star of Argentina's first World Cup triumph in 1978, scored a whopping 303 goals over the course of his career, which included spells at Valencia, Rosario Central, River Plate and Instituto. But what if his career had taken a different path and ended up at Spurs? Well, just years after helping his nation win their first World Cup, he nearly joined his fellow countrymen in Ozzie Ardiles and Ricky Villa at the North London club. But why didn't the deal get over the line? Well, in episode 4 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors, Richie explains why the transfer didn't come to fruition for one of the best strikers in the world of the 70s and 80s. Find this week's episode in your OTB football podcast feed for free each and every Monday. You can also go back and listen to the other episodes in this series focusing on Michael Laudrup, Pelé and Ronaldo. Subscribe in your OTB football podcast feed now.